Is it difficult to accept what happens in your life sometimes? It's hard, isn't it? Sometimes we feel, why is Krishna arranging like this? Why doesn't Krishna arrange like this? Sometimes we go in front of Gokulananda and everything. It's okay for you, you're sitting there smiling. What about my life? So to surrender means to fully embrace the plan of Krishna in our life. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes many, many songs, but he centers around six principles. In a beautiful verse he says, Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam rakshishyati ti vishvasho gopritve varanam tatha atmanikshepakarpanye sadvida saranagati. If you want to understand what is Sharanagati, then there are six limbs, six aspects. Anukulyasya sankalpa. First aspect of surrender means whatever is good for your spiritual life, you accept it. Pratikulyasya varjanam. Whatever is harmful to your spiritual life, you're ready to let it go. Rakshishyati iti vishvasho. Vishvash, you all know. Vishvash means a conviction. Third aspect is that one should have conviction. Krishna will take care of everything. No chinta, no anxiety. Krishna will take care. Goptritve varanam tatha. Fourth aspect, to know that Krishna is maintaining me. No one else, it's not my boss maintaining me. It's not my husband maintaining me. All glories to the husbands. But no, Krishna is maintaining my body, my mind, my soul. Arpanye, fifth aspect of surrender, to be deeply humble. It's not so easy to be humble. It's not so easy to tolerate. And Atmanikshepa, full surrender of the soul. Self-surrender, Atmanikshepa, literally. So these are the six items of surrender. One may say, how do we apply this in our life? In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I'm going to tell you one story. And as I'm telling you this story, I want you to think about how these six items are represented in this story. And the story is the story of how Sanatan Goswami surrendered to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Sanatan Goswami's journey of how he surrenders to Mahaprabhu is basically exemplifying Saranagati. If you ever get a chance, you should go to Bangladesh. How many of you have been to Bangladesh? You've been?
No, Mayapur.
Bangladesh. Bangladesh, you must go. If you want to experience the original Gaudiya culture, then of course Mayapur is there, but you'll find the original Gaudiya culture even stronger in Bangladesh. Prasadam is religion. Every prasadam is like, it's not just simple, you cannot just take 10-minute prasadam. Every prasadam is a feast. Like so many sabjis. And, you know, like I was, one time we were traveling in the beginning when I went to Bangladesh and they were serving prasadam. So, you know, sometimes when they're serving and you're hungry, you think like, okay, I've got to do this in an intelligent way, you know. Make sure I end up full up at the end of this meal. So they came with the first item, and you know, you get excited, you know, so you say, yeah, put more. Who knows, will it come back again? While the opportunity is there, grab it. But two mistakes I made. First mistake I made is I didn't realize that the first prep in any feast in Bangladesh is shukta. Shukta means extremely bitter. I took one bite and oh my god. And second mistake I made is I didn't realize there were 10 more subjis to come after. It was just shukta is just to get the digestive system going. So, Bangladesh means prasadam. Bangladesh means kirtan. In Bangladesh, it doesn't matter who you are, where you are, at 7 o'clock in the evening, everyone stops. And everyone comes for Gaura Aarti, and every day is a festival. And Bangladesh means Vaishnava Seva. They will come to pick you up at the airport. They will do everything for you. They will. The senior devotees will serve prasadam because it's an honor to serve the Vaishnava. So Bangladesh is a very special place. Everyone should go. And in Bangladesh, there's one place called Jessore. And in Jessore, this is the original place where Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis were born. There's a tree, and it said that they were born under this tree. Somehow there's a tree for everything. This tree they were on, this tree they were born. Somehow or other, everyone gave birth under a tree. Who knows? Anyway, they say that marks the spot. But a short time after Rupa and Sanatan were born, then they came across the border. You see, at that time, West Bengal and East Bengal, it was all India, isn't it? So Bangladesh today was East Bengal then. So they just came over. And where did they come? They came to a place called Ramakeli. They came for different reasons, but economic reasons, other things. So they came to Ramakeli. And although they were born in Saraswat Brahmin families, in Ramakeli the government was a Muslim government. So therefore they had to take up posts in the Muslim government in order that the Hindus would be protected. So they did that in Ramakeli. They took up posts in the government. Rupa Goswami became the finance minister of the Nawab, and Sanatan Goswami became the private secretary. And they changed their names. Rupa and Sanatan became known as Sakara Malik and Davir Khas. So someone may say they converted. Did they convert to Islam? No, because in their heart and their mind they were worshipping Krishna. In fact, it's said that they made Ramakeli into a Gupta Vrindavan. You understand? Gupta? Gupta means concealed. So they created Radhakund, Shyamakund, many aspects of Vrindavan. So they were living in Vrindavan, although externally Muslim government. And because they are ultimately Mahaprabhu's eternal associates, they are manjaris in the spiritual world, so naturally they had that connection with Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu was coming to them in dreams. And at one point they felt, we should just leave everything and we just should just go and find Mahaprabhu and just join him. So they were writing letters to Mahaprabhu that we want to give up everything and we just want to come and join you. And then Mahaprabhu, one day he wrote back a letter. And in the letter he gave a cryptic message. Paravya sinini nari vyagrapi griha karmashu tadeva svadayatyantar navasanga rasayanam. Mahaprabhu said, you want to give up everything? You want to join me? Paravya sinini nari. If there is a lady and she is married and she has another lover, then what does she do? She stays at home and she does her household work even more attentively so that no one will ever have a suspicion that she has some other lover. And inside of her, she is thinking of the other lover. So like this, Mahaprabhu gave a cryptic message and he said, you don't need to run away from anything, you just stay there, you do your work, you do it very attentively so no one will assume anything, and inside of yourself, manmana bhava madbhakto, just think of me, become my devotee, always have your consciousness fixed on me. So they did that. You sometimes feel, I want to leave it all. I want to go. Run to Krishna. So sometimes we feel like that, we just want to run away from everything. But Mahaprabhu said there's a time for everyone. You see, the mango is on the tree. And when it's ripe, you don't need to actually pick it, it will just fall. Nature's arrangement. You don't need to pick it, it will fall. So when the time is right, Krishna will arrange everything in our life if there is something change needed. So they carried on, and then at a certain point they realized, okay, the time has come, the mango is about to drop. So Rupa Goswami, his position was finance minister, Sanatan Goswami's position was private secretary. Sanatan Goswami's position was more involved. So he could not immediately leave, but Rupa Goswami, he just left. 50% of his wealth, he just gave to all the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. 25% of his wealth, he gave to his family members. And 25% he kept for emergency. And like this, he renounced and he just left. And he left to meet Mahaprabhu. And in the end, he ended up meeting Mahaprabhu at Prayag, Allahabad, Dashashvamedha Ghat. Sanatan Goswami could not leave so easily. And so what happened is Sanatan Goswami, he was becoming more and more disinterested. So then he decided, I'll just call in Sikh. Pull a Sikhi. So he called in sick, and he said, no, I cannot come, you know, my health is not good, I can't, no. But at home he had invited 25 to 30 Brahmanas and he was just studying Bhagavatam. They were having nice sangha. And then one day the Nawab, he understood, no, something is not right here. So then he went charging in. And went to Sanatan Goswami's place and he opened the door and he said, my God, all these people, and all happy, smiling, high energy, discussing Krishna Katha, Hari Katha. What are you doing? You said you're sick. You're saying you can't function. You're saying you can't come into work. But here I see you're discussing and enjoying and relishing. And what is in your mind? Now you come back to work. Sanatana Goswami said, no, I am done. I'm done. He said, no, I have to go and conquer another big kingdom and you are my right-hand person. You must come with me. Sanatana Goswami said, I am done. And then Nawab looked at him and said, you are saying you are done? Okay, then you have to go to jail. So then he put Sanatan Goswami in jail. And so there Sanatan Goswami was there. But still Sanatan Goswami was meditating. How will I join Mahaprabhu? So you have to understand, Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami, they were sadhus. They were saintly people. But sadhu doesn't mean only just simple in mind. They were also very expert. They were very. They knew how to get things done. Even Prabhupada said, "In business, no one can defeat me. I am a Calcutta boy." Prabhupada was expert at everything. So, what did Rupa Goswami do? He had saved 25% of his wealth for emergencies. Yeah. So he said, okay, he sent that money to Sanatan Goswami and he said, with this money you bribe the jail keeper. So one day Sanatan Goswami came to the jail keeper and he said, here are 5,000 gold coins. I want to go on yatra. I want to go on yatra to Mecca. But I want to go to Mecca. Funny, huh? You should support. You are Muslim. You understand this is one of the five pillars. Everyone must do Hajj. You must go to Mecca. This is our culture. The jail keeper said, no, I cannot let you go. I, you know, What will happen to me when the Nawab finds out you will be in Mecca, you will get Allah's grace, but what will happen to me? He says, no, you don't worry, you just say that I went to the Ganga, I went to the river just to empty my body and then I just jumped in. And you just tell them I committed suicide. And then he put 5,000 gold coins in his hand. Yeah. See, in India, if you wanna, you have to let the people feel the money. Psychology, no? You have to let them hear, feel it. So he put 5,000 gold coins in his hands. And then he says, you know what? Because you're my friend, here's another 2,000. So he says, look, spiritually, you will benefit. Because I'm going to Mecca, you will also get the benefit. Materially, you have 7,000 gold coins. And risk, there is no risk. Just tell them I jumped in, jump down. You win on all fronts, what's the problem? He said, okay, sounds good, let's do it. So, like this, the jailkeeper let him go. And then he just left. He didn't know where he was going, how he would be maintained, where he would sleep at night, where he would eat. You know, ashram in India, they have a brahmachari training course, and then at the end of the brahmachari training course, you have to do one thing to graduate from the training course. You know what you have to do? You have to walk 1,000 miles across India to one of the dhams, and with no money. You have to just beg along the way, and whoever gives you, gives you. Whoever invites you, invites you. And where you'll sleep at night, you just have to make an arrangement. So many of our devotees did this. Janakinath did this actually. Training to rely on Krishna. So Sanatana Goswami just went, he left. And along the way, he stopped at a place called Hajipur. And in Hajipur, Sanatana Goswami, he had a sister, and his sister's husband's name was Srikanta. So there, Sanatana Goswami met Srikanta. He said, look, you've been traveling. Where are you going? I'm going to meet Mahaprabhu. You haven't eaten. You have nowhere to stay. Here, you eat. I'll give you a place to stay. I'll give you... Sanatana Goswami said, no, I don't want to be diverted by all of this. I want to go and meet Mahaprabhu. He said, I'll leave. And Srikanta said, okay, at least before you leave, let me give you one thing. So what did he give him? A nice chadar. He said, yeah, at least you take this chadar. Nice. Very nice chadar, woolen chadar. Okay. So Sanatana Goswami continued on. Finally, Sanatana Goswami, he was thinking Mahaprabhu is in Vrindavan, but he went via Varanasi. You may have been to Varanasi. So there, by his transcendental perception, he could understand Mahaprabhu has come to Varanasi. So there he came to the house of Chandrasekhar. So Mahaprabhu was inside the house. He could understand, oh, Sanatana Goswami has come. So he looked at Chandrasekhar and he said, go outside, there is one great sadhu there. So Chandrasekhar, he came out, he looked left, he looked right, and he went back in and he said, no sadhus here. Mahaprabhu said, no, there's a great sadhu there. He said, no, there's no one. Mahaprabhu said, is there anyone there? He said, there's some beggar, some fakir. Fakir means like a Muslim kind of mendic. He said, some. No, he's the one. Really, maybe. Chandrasekhar went out and brought in Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami is very humble. He looked at Mahaprabhu. Nicha jati, nicha sangi patita adham, kuvishaya kupe pati guna inu janam. Nicha jati, my caste is low. Nicha sangi, my association is low. Patita dham, you will not find anyone more fallen than me. Kuvishaya kupe padi gonainu janam. My life is like I've fallen into a dark well of material existence. I am nothing, I am no one. Mahaprabhu embraced him. And when he embraced Sanatan Goswami felt so much pain. He said, well, how can you embrace me? I'm unclean, I'm low caste, I've been in a Muslim government, I've been serving meat eaters. Mahaprabhu said, Satkarma nipuno vipro mantra tantra visharada avaishnav guru nasyad Vaishnava Svapacho Guru. Mahaprabhu said, there can be someone, Satkarma Nipuno Vipro, he can be a Vipra, he can be born in a Brahman family, Mantra Tantra Visharada, he can know all the mantras, all the tantra, Avaishnav, but if he is not a Vaishnav, Guru Nashat, he cannot be considered an object of respect or worship. However, Vaishnava, Svapacho Guru, even if one is born in a family of dog eaters, if he dedicates his life, he is worshipable. So you've dedicated, so therefore I'm embracing you. So Mahaprabhu embraced him. And in this way, then Mahaprabhu said, let me shave you up, because he had long hair, and his clothes and everything. And so Mahaprabhu shaved him, and then when Mahaprabhu offered him new clothes, he said, no, I don't want new clothes, just give me some old torn cloth. So Mahaprabhu was very happy. He could see, yes, he has become a sadhu, he's not attached to anything. But Mahaprabhu was still looking at him. Mahaprabhu did not say anything, but he was looking at his chadar. He's given up everything, you know. But he did not say anything, but Sanatan Goswami could immediately understand Mahaprabhu is, he's looking at this chadar, this expensive chadar. Mahaprabhu is not pleased that I have this opulent chadar. Can you imagine? Sanatan Goswami gave up everything and he came there, but he realized, no, still Mahaprabhu doesn't want me to have this one thing. So then he went to the, by the riverside, and there was some Bengali beggar. So he said, let's do a swap. Because, what do you mean? He says, I want you to take this and you give me the old one. The Bengali beggar, he said, you're making fun of me? Why? He said, no, I don't want this. You take this and you give me the old one. So then he took the old one, he gave the new one. And then when he came back, Mahaprabhu was very happy. He says, yes, when you surrender to Krishna, you should remove all of your material attachments. You should get rid of the disease in such a way that the disease may never come back. And so Mahaprabhu was very happy. And like this, then Mahaprabhu began to instruct Sanatan Goswami. And later on, Sanatan Goswami came to Jagannath Puri. And when Sanatan walked to Jagannath Puri to meet Mahaprabhu there later on, then he contracted a skin disease. So it's kind of like eczema. He was, and his, you know, pus, blood was coming out of his skin. And when he arrived in Puri, Mahaprabhu was again embracing him. And he felt so bad that Mahaprabhu's body is becoming contaminated by my body. And he resolved that I will end my life. In Vedic culture, it's like that. Sometimes someone was making a, you know, either I'll jump in the Triveni Sangam, or I'll go under the Rathyatraka, or I'll jump off Govardhan Hill. So he said, no, I will just, in his mind, he made a decision. I will go under the Rathka. Because this body, I can't stand it. This body is contaminating Mahaprabhu's body. So Mahaprabhu could understand his mind. And then Mahaprabhu said, you are a thief. So Sanatana Goswami, what do you mean? Mahaprabhu said, because you have fully surrendered your body to me. And now you want to damage your body, now you want to terminate the existence of this body, but your body does not belong to you. Because your body has been surrendered to me. And I have many things I want to achieve through your body. Bhakta Bhakti Krishna Prem Tatvira Nidhar Vaishnavera Kritya Ar Vaishnava Achar. Like this, Mahaprabhu gave him many instructions that I want to do many things through your body. And so, Mahaprabhu said, you cannot commit suicide, you have to continue on and serve the Sankirtan movement and go to Vrindavan. So in that way, Sanatana Goswami went to Vrindavan. And this is the story of how Sanatana Goswami surrendered to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So now let me ask you, Sadvida Saranagati, to surrender there are six limbs. So the first limb is Anukulyasya Sankalpa. If you want to surrender, then you have to accept that which is favorable to your service to Krishna. Can anyone think in this story of how Sanatana Goswami did that? There was something that he accepted that was very good for ultimately his service to Krishna.
Was it the gold coins?
Right. So the first thing that he did was that Rupa Goswami gave him that money. And someone may say, what does he have to do with money? He's giving up the world. Why is he accepting money? But he accepted that which was favorable, because with that money he bribed the jail keeper, which allowed him to go to Mahaprabhu. So the first lesson is that in surrender, it's not about giving up material things, but it's about utilizing whatever material things you have in a way that will bring you closer to Krishna. Then, pratikulyasya varjanam. If one wants to surrender, they have to be willing to let go of that which doesn't help them in their service to Krishna. So what do you think Sanatana Goswami let go of? What did he give up?
His job.
His job. Don't get any ideas. Yes, he gave up his job. It was not whimsical. He didn't give it up because it was hard. He didn't give it up because he was lazy. He gave it up because he had an intense desire that now all of my energy, all of my time, I want to give to Mahaprabhu. And this job, it is no longer serving the purpose. And so he was ready. Are we ready to let go? There are certain things in our life that we have to let go of. You see? We may do so many things in spiritual life and think, I'm practicing, but why am I not advancing? Because you may have taken up so many spiritual practices, but you're still holding on to so many things. So if you hold on, then it won't work. So spiritual life means there's certain things that you have to take up and certain things that you have to let go. And one should be expert enough to know what are those things in my life that I have to let go of. And then one should have the inner strength to say, okay, then I let it go. Patikulyasya varjanam. Then rakshishyati iti vishvasho, the strong conviction that Krishna will protect me. How do you think that was exemplified in Sanatana Goswami's story?
He left the prison not knowing where he was going.
Yeah, he left the prison. He was walking to Mahaprabhu. He didn't know how he would eat, how he would survive, where he would sleep, what would happen along the way. But he had strong faith that, no, I'm giving my life to Krishna. Krishna will take care of me. Krishna will protect me. Krishna will provide all facility that is required for me. So it takes a little bit of bravery in spiritual life. I think it was Columbus, he said, you can't reach what is on the horizon unless you're willing to sail away from the shore. You see? You want to find what's on the horizon? You want to find the great thing that's there in the distance? Then you have to be willing to move away from the shore of safety, the shore of comfort, the shore of convenience. You have to be ready to venture outside, go into the unknown. you have to be ready to take a risk. So Sanatan Goswami did that, knowing that I'll take a risk, but Krishna will protect me. And then Gopitve Varanam Tata. Sanatan Goswami knew Krishna is my maintainer. I don't have to depend on anyone else. How was that exemplified in this story?
By going as a sadhu?
Yes.
You say sadhus go 1,000 miles and live.
Yes, there's that. But what did he specifically do to exemplify that he understood no one is maintaining me in this world, Krishna is maintaining me?
Exactly, sure.
Yeah, he gave up that shawl to signify that, you know, I'm not dependent on anyone in this world. See, that shawl was still, he felt, a symbol that I'm depending on someone. So he said, no, let's give that away as well. Krishna will provide whatever I require. Krishna will supply. And then, humility. Karpanye, how was that displayed? When he came to see Mahaprabhu, then he said, why are you embracing me? Nicha jati, nicha sanghi, I'm nothing. He felt this very deeply, that I'm so insignificant. I don't have anything to offer, but still Mahaprabhu will accept me and make my life useful. No ego. And then finally, Atmanikshepa, surrendering everything. Yes, Mahaprabhu told him, your body is mine. Mm-hmm. And therefore you can't damage this body. You can't take terminate the lifetime of this body, because you've given your body to me. Your body will be used. I have many things I want to achieve through your body. Your body will be an instrument of service. And in this way, when you analyze the story of Sanatan Goswami, then you can understand this is surrender. That we should look closely at our lives and find out how these six principles are playing out in our life. And in that way, we can understand whether we're actually becoming surrendered. Because if you become surrendered, then Krishna is forced. Krishna will be forced to appear before you. Krishna is Svatantra, he is completely independent. But then later on in Bhagavatam he says, Aham Bhakta Paradino Yashvan Tantra Ivadvija Sadhubir Grishta Ridayo, that I am completely dependent on my devotee Ashvatantra, I am not independent. Because they've conquered me. Sadhubir grashta ridayo. They have imprisoned me. The saintly souls have imprisoned me within their heart because they've given up everything for me. And therefore, they're forcing me to come in front. Like Prabhupada, isn't it, when he was leaving LA, he said, I've captured Krishna and I've brought him here. Now you worship him nicely. So that's the pure devotee. He captures Krishna by their devotion. So this is our prayer, that we can develop this surrender. And this is the success of life. But how you do that surrender, we all have different lives, we all have different paths, so you have to find out how these principles relate to you on your present journey where you are. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, so if anyone has any question or clarification or any comment you'd like to make, then we can have a little bit of a discussion.
I can kick off. Oftentimes you know that it's a thing that you shouldn't be doing, yet you still do it. Because you still have that inner strength. So. She's still doing. I don't know how you build up that strength to say, I guess the willpower to stop it. Whether you are, say for example, you want to go somewhere, or you want to eat something, or you want to watch something, or things like that. You know it is wrong. No, it's against you try to, you understand that it's you have to give up renunciation, all that, and you have to still do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm my own self.
So how do we get that strength? Yes, so Arjuna is asking the same question to Krishna in the Gita, that how is it that even when I know something is not beneficial for me, still I'm impelled as if by force to do that thing? You see, material life is like it's like a car going in a certain direction, and you can't just, there's so much momentum that you can't just stop it on a dime. You can't just stop it in one go. You see, it's a process. You see, like even like say you're driving on the motorway and you take your attention away for some time and you miss the exit that you're supposed to get off on. You've done that, right? Mataji gets on your case. Right? It's like so frustrating because you think, oh my God, I've just missed the exit. And you just feel. But then you realize in that moment, okay, I've missed the exit. You can't just do a U-turn. You can't just change it there and then. You have to understand it's a process now. That means you're going to have to carry on driving, then you're going to have to slow down, then you're going to have to get off at the next exit, then you're going to have to turn around, then you're going to have to come back, and then you're going to get the exit. So your life, our lives are like that. We can't, we came to Krishna consciousness already with so many habits, with so many mentalities, with so many desires. And now what we've done is we're seeing, oh my God, I missed an exit. And we can't just change it all in one go. So it's a process, step by step, you have to change. And how do you change step by step? First thing is, take the help of the Shastra. The Shastra can give you so much strength. You see, because the Shastra is purifying the intelligence. And when the mind is coming up with so many ideas, if you have strong intelligence, you will be able to resist the demands of the mind. Therefore, take the wisdom of Shastra. Shastra is like extremely powerful. That knowledge gives you a lot of strength. The second thing is take advantage of Vaishnavas, because Vaishnavas give blessings, Vaishnavas give encouragement, Vaishnavas give good advice, and Vaishnavas, when you admit to them and you're open, that you know what, I made a mistake. Krishna sees your honesty in opening up to a Vaishnava, and in that honesty, Krishna says, here is a sincere soul. Let me give him strength. So take advantage of the Shastra, take advantage of the sadhus, and then take advantage also of sattva, the mode of goodness. Because when you live in the mode of goodness, when your food is in the goodness, when your habits are in goodness, when your rising time is in goodness, when your environment is in goodness, it gives you strength of mind. And you will then be able to act on your intelligence. But when we live in the mode of passion, when we live in the mode of ignorance, then our intelligence becomes more and more covered, and then we're more and more susceptible to falling to habits that we know are not good for us.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to get that strength, Shastra, sadhus, and sattva. And there can be other things as well, but if you do those things.
Mm-hmm. If
if a person is reached a stage where his interest in life is nothing but serving Krishna, in other words, the purity is such that everything in this world makes him completely sick of not want to be part of it. Total focus on Krishna, serving Krishna. With that situation, I would assume there is purity of such degree that the person has realized that he is not his body, he is individual spirit soul and a servant of Krishna. Now, would that automatically imply that he's already surrendered in that situation?
Because he has a desire only to serve Krishna?
Yes. Does it follow?
You see, sometimes we have to see, like we may have a flash of inspiration that yes, everything for Krishna. But we don't know how deep that is. We don't know how substantial that is. You know, like sometimes you can think, yes, I just want to serve Krishna. But then after doing for some time, then again so many material desires come up again. Right? So therefore, in our tradition, surrender or sharanagati is not a very sudden thing. Generally, it's happening in stages. Okay, some people may do like that, but for the most people, sharanagati comes in stages. Therefore, it's not like one day you're a grihastha and the next day you just take sannyas. No, you're a grihastha and then at a certain point you start walking away a little bit from more material concern, and then at the next point then you begin, you take vanaprastha, you travel more, and then later on the man and woman may separate for some time, and then later on then we can talk about sannyas. So when you have a plaster, very few people will just go. Most people, they'll go under the tap, hot water, little by little by little, because it's more achievable. So generally, the good sentiment may be there that, yes, I just want to give my life to Krishna, but it may not be sustainable. That's why even Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami, not because Sanatana Goswami was not qualified, but to show an example. He said, don't immediately run away. Mm-hmm. Give it time. Remember, when the mango is ripe, it will fall. But if you pick it before it's ripe, you may have it in your hand, but it won't be sweet.
So even Sanatana Goswami wasn't surrendered at that point in time.
He was. But it was an example to us. Similar, same thing with Raghunath Das Goswami. He was running away from home every single day. His mother told his father, why don't you chain him? You should chain him, he's running away every day. His father said, he has the chains of all material opulence. He has chains of a beautiful wife, but all of those things cannot keep him here. So what do you think physical chains will do? But still, although his heart was moving, still what did Mahaprabhu tell him? Go back. Be patient. When the time is right, you can go. And so he did go back, and then eventually he also left. Mm-hmm. So timing is everything. If you do something too early, you may end up messing the whole thing up. Right? And if you do it too late, it may become too late. So timing is everything. To know when is the right time. And therefore one must have guidance. Therefore, shishyasteham sadhimam tam prapannam. Arjun was also thinking, okay, it's time to go. Krishna said, it's not the right time. So Krishna spoke the Gita to tell Arjuna to stay. The amazing thing is, later on, Krishna spoke another Gita, Uddhav Gita. The whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to tell Arjuna to stay. And the whole purpose of Uddhav Gita is to tell Uddhav, take sannyas. Because different people, different times, different stages, different instruction.
But Arjuna was already surrendered right at the start.
In the warfare. But again, Krishna was teaching him like that to show us that it's not the right.
Thank you.
So timing is everything. Know when the time is right. And don't do it too early, and don't wait too long. No, no, Krishna, just now coming, I'm coming. Then we miss the boat. So don't miss the boat.
You're talking about U-turn, Sanagati and surrender. We tried to do that one, as Bhaktika Swami told us to do. We tried to stay in India. But what happened, we leave the house and then we go on to pilgrimage. Then every time we go, the house is broken. It happened four times. One time the police came, they arrested the guy, thief. Nothing happened. The case was running for 3-4 years, nothing happened. In the end, I was so fed up, I said, my Patrija, then leave the case, just forget about it. I'm going back to London and we'll just start peace here. So, I don't know how to do U-turn now. How to go against India and start preaching? How to do that?
If you're preaching, you should carry on preaching. That's good.
We start. Open the center. This is going on nicely.
Oh, in India.
Yeah. It's going. Two doctors were interested, and they're running at the moment. Every Thursday, when I was there, about 150 people used to come. And so it's running on nicely. But how to go about? It's just a little bit scary. Because of Corona, these 2 years now, and then this time I tried. One time he said, no, because of Holi, you can't go there. Then now he says, so it's because hot weather, you can't go. So what? How to do that? It's a determination that I can decide. I'm preaching here also, but at the same time I want to go back there. What I started, I want to encourage them.
Yeah, I don't know all the details, but you know, sometimes maybe, again, bit by bit, go there for 1 month, two months, 3 months, and then come back, and then go again, and gradually make the change,
you see,
in a way that is sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You see. But ultimately, if you're preaching here, you're not losing anything. It's just, you may be getting more benefit.
Yeah.
Wherever we are, ultimately, if it's in that way, if you're serving, you're preaching, then still you're getting the benefit. So no problem.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Like before your question, when you said when the mind is right, how can one determine that this is the time, this is the point whereby I should start to detach? Yeah, or I should not detach, but I should progress more spiritually. And one question is, the second is, you know, the way our lives are, we are just like caught up in a web, like, you know, in such a situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been listening to lots of lectures, and I've come to this point whereby it's so much emphasis given in balance. Yeah, we have to balance. So we have to balance, like, a bit of this and a bit of that, a bit of this and that. But the worry is the time is going, and by balancing, we are not surrendering fully. I'm not surrendering fully. So
depends what you're balancing. What are you balancing? Are you balancing different spiritual things?
Yes, so material, which is family, responsibility.
But your family is not material. Your family are all devotees.
Prabhu, I've got a son and a daughter, you know.
Okay, your first question, how do you know when the time is right? And I guess the first and the second question is connected. How do you know when you should make another step? How do you know when you should? Radha Kantapu will answer this one. Can I say something first? Sorry. Okay, I'll say something and then Radha Kantapu will correct me. Of course, Krishna is in the heart and we have to pray. First thing is that prayer must be there. You must pray deeply to Krishna that, yes, in this life I want to surrender to you. Now you please give me the intelligence, you please give me the indication. You please send the Vaishnavas to me and you send me the signs. And not just that, you make my heart, my eyes, my ears open so that I can understand your messages. That's the first thing. You see, Prabhupada understood the message. When his wife sold his Bhagavatams for the tea biscuits, isn't it? His eyes, his ears, his heart was open and he understood this is a sign from Krishna. And that was the sign when he knew, okay, time to go. So you may say, but how do I know? Maybe it's my mind. Is it Krishna's sign? See, in Krishna consciousness, there's no replacement for sincerity. So your sincerity, Krishna will give you that conviction. And then, of course, you have Vaishnavas who are guiding you, who are telling you, okay, now it's time to walk away a little bit more. Okay, no, you're going too detached. You should give them some time. Sometimes we have many Vaishnavas who are guiding us, which is nice, but we also need someone more specific who knows our situation well and who we have that trust in to give more specific advice. So then we take the help of the Vaishnavas. And then, in this way, we understand how to walk away from things. Yes, we have to balance, but yeah, at one point we have to tip the scales to Krishna as well. Both things have to be there. It's not just balance your whole life, then one day it has to come to the point of tipping the scales and saying, everything for Krishna, nothing for me. But if you tip the scale too quickly, then you can make a mess of it. Therefore, you need guidance to know when is that point. So, we have to be very internal. And what I would say is make small steps. You see, because when you make a small step, then you can understand, no, this is not good. Okay, let's take a little step back. If you think, okay, I'm just waiting for that point that I can make one big step, that's not a good way to do it. Therefore, make small steps towards the direction that you want to go and test the ground. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You want to add something to that?
Can I ask a question? I went to the garden a couple of days ago to check my flower plant, and there was a weed entangled with the flowering plant. So if I was to pull out the weed, the flower plant would come out as well. But if I let the weed grow, then it would disturb the flowering plant.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that if I look my Bhakti Lata Bij, and if there's some weeds growing around me, my Bhakti Lata Bij, how do I remove those weeds, because they can uproot the entire creeper if I'm not careful.
Mm-hmm. So first thing is we have to understand what those weeds are. So Chaitanya Charitamrita is explaining what are the weeds. Labha, Puja, Pratistadi, Jata Upashaka Gan. That, you know, desire for name, fame, Mahaprabhu says violence towards other living beings. He gives a list of six and he says these are the weeds that are growing. So the first thing is we have to be able to understand what is a weed and what is harmful. Once you are able to identify clearly what is a weed, you're giving an analogy here, but in the analogy of bhakti, the weeds, there's no chance that uprooting a weed will uproot your bhakti. Because the thing that Mahaprabhu says will uproot your bhakti is Vaishnava Parad. Jadi Vaishnava Parade Ute Hati Mata. Upadeva Chinde that a Sukhiyaya Tata Mahaprabhu says, that this is what will uproot your bhakti, Vaishnava Parad. So, I know you're giving an analogy here, but in your bhakti, it can never be that uprooting one of the anartas will uproot your bhakti. It's not. It cannot be like that. It can only be if you're trying to uproot something that you've misidentified as an anarta. Therefore, you have to be able to identify what are the anartas. And then if you're able to identify appropriately and you uproot it, it will never uproot your bhakti, it will free your bhakti. So it's a matter of knowing. You know, most people don't even know what their anartas are. The things that aren't anartas, they think they are anartas, and the things that aren't, they think that's okay. Most of us don't even know ourselves. Most of us don't even know what is blocking us from advancement in spiritual life. Many, I'm not most of us, I'm just very extreme. Yeah. Many of us, let's say. We need to take feedback from others. That's hard. But only when we hear from others will we be able to understand ourselves better, and then we'll be able to identify the anarthas. So the main problem in our spiritual life is to identify the anarthas and then to have the strength and willingness to deal with them.
Thank you.
I have a following question. Mataji gave an analogy. I want to take it as in a literal sense, not an analogy. When we have weeds in the garden, if we get rid of them, is it okay? I mean, you're trying to kill them. So what in the lawn, in my lawn, I've got weeds. And we've got nice white flowers. And to me it looks nice. But some people may say the lawn has got a lot of weeds, but it's got small white flowers, it looks nice. So sometimes I think, should I just put weed killer and get rid of them? Then I think, is it okay to put weed killer on the lawn and get rid of the weeds? So I've come to the view that I like the flowers, I'm going to leave them. They're weeds. It's lawn, no, they're a brilliant lawn, it's okay. You've got nice. I want to leave them. Is that okay to? I mean, my question is it okay?
The basic principle is mahimsa sarva bhutanam, that don't commit violence unless it's absolutely necessary. So if it's necessary to do something with the weeds because you have some purpose, you're growing some crop or something, or whatever, flowers or whatever, and sometimes you may have to. But if there's no reason for it, just for the purpose of making something look nice, or isn't it in Krishna Balaram temple, they kept the tree. They kept the tree in the courtyard. You think, why is there a tree there? That's strange. I mean, in India, you will see, they're building a road, and they build a road, and it's like this. And it goes around the tree. That makes no practical sense. I mean, just floor the tree and just make a straight road. No. Unless it's necessary, you don't do it. So, yeah. Yeah, like, I know. Yeah. I can get the point there.
Yeah. I was just wondering about, like, surrender in town in. How can we understand surrender for devotees who are, like, you know, in extreme circumstances? For example, like, you know, the war in Ukraine, things like that. Like, yeah, how can we understand the principles of, you know, relying on Krishna for maintenance or things like that for those devotees who are living in those circumstances?
Yeah. It's amazing, actually. This I was reading in one class recently a letter from a devotee in Mariupol, I think that's the place name. And she was actually saying I'm so grateful for this war, because in this war I was actually born as a devotee of Krishna, because I learned to rely on Krishna. I learned that actually there's no security in the world. I learned that, you know, all the desires and aspirations that I had, how insignificant they are in the midst of what I'm experiencing now. Saranagati, surrender, Krishna facilitates us to do that in all kinds of situations. Sometimes Krishna will send you great prosperity in your life, and that can help your Saranagati in a different way. Sometimes Krishna will send a great challenge in your life, and that can help your Saranagati in a different way. So every situation can be used or misused to surrender to Krishna. For example, if Krishna sends you a very beautiful life, a comfortable life, a life in which you have everything, you can misuse that. You can just enjoy it and think like life is nice and go further away from Krishna. Or you can think about that life and think how kind Krishna is, how much facility he's given. I've got such a peaceful mind now, I don't need to worry about everything. Let me do deep sadhana and take advantage of the peace of mind that I've been given by Krishna. And in that way you can use the situation. And the same goes for the opposite. When it's it becomes very intense, Krishna sends a big challenge, we can misuse that situation. It causes people to doubt God, it causes people to give up their faith, it causes people to feel, why does God allow bad things to happen to good people? Or like this devotee, maybe later on I'll try to find the letter. But you can be born as a devotee from that. You can use it. You can realize, you know, what is there in this world? Everything is so transient. You know, the other day I was speaking to Parashuram. He was just in the center of Ukraine. He went right in the middle. You know, he was showing me videos. I mean, he said in 1 minute I counted 9 bombs going off. Yeah, like right there. Like he's taking like a selfie and there's like a bomb going off. But you know, what does that do for your realization? You understand? Like, you begin to realize, what is this world? What is life? You know, where? So it's harsh. We don't want anyone to be in that situation. Yet if Krishna, by his inconceivable will, puts a devotee in that situation, we can understand that even that is bringing about surrender in a very beautiful way. What's it going to take for us to surrender? See, like, are we going to be serious enough to do it ourselves? Are we going to be serious enough just to internally meditate and say, yeah, I've understood Shastra, I need to surrender to Krishna? How many people are going to be able to do that? Therefore, Krishna, I say this, I don't like saying this, because I get scared because then something will happen. But probably Krishna will have to arrange something in your life. Otherwise, we're not going to get to that point of our own, because we don't have that kind of urgency. So, we don't wish it upon anyone. We don't wish such a thing upon anyone. But then when you look at it in a different way, you think, if Krishna doesn't give that, when are we ever going to become serious?
So you're saying, take it away from you, Krishna takes it away, like from Prabhupada, his wealth and so on.
Prabhupada was giving a lecture, and Prabhupada was quoting this verse. Yasyaham anugrhinami harisheta dhanam shane, tato dhanam kejantasya svajana dukadukam. Prabhupada quoted this verse. Krishna says, when I give my special mercy to someone, I take everything away. Prabhupada was quoting this verse and he looked out at everyone and he said, I have personal experience of this. And everyone kind of kind of laughing and probably don't laugh. If it happens to you, you'll be very morose. But that's Krishna's mercy. I don't know, what's it going to take to become serious? I don't know, it's a difficult one. Therefore Krishna arranges all these gruesome situations in the world to wake us up to the reality.
Mm-hmm.
First class person learns by hearing. Second class person learns by seeing. But third class person has to experience. And most of us will probably have to experience.
Mm-hmm.
So we think, no, life has gone nicely. No problems have come. Krishna is so nice. He gave such a nice life. Yeah, he gave you such a nice life. But problem is, if in that nice life, in that comfortable life, in that life where everything is provided for you, you didn't develop saranagati, then you know what? You're going to have to come back. And someone else, so many problems, so many difficulties, so many challenges, so much upheaval. But in their heart they realize there's no reason to come back here. Who's fortunate?
I'm feeling like that, but I still find myself the whole surrender, also partial surrender for that matter. I mean, I've been feeling like this for the last 2 years. I'm sick of this world. I don't want this world. I want to get out of it. I want to come back. Where's the surrender? There isn't. Where's partial?
Yeah, therefore, to surrender, two things are required.
Mm.
Not just detachment from the material world, but attraction for Krishna.
Mm.
It has to go both ways. Someone may just look at the world and say, terrible, miserable, rubbish, you know. But then you have to have some attraction for Goloka, some attraction for Krishna.
So
the next question is, where does the attraction come from?
Exactly.
Therefore, you hear about Krishna. You hear about Krishna. And when you hear about Krishna, Prabhupada says in the 6th verse of the 15th chapter, when he's talking about the spiritual world, Krishna says, Natad bhashayate shuryo na shashanko na pavaka. That spiritual abode is so beautiful, there's no need for the sun or the moon. One who goes there never comes back to this material world. Prabhupada writes in the purport, one should become captivated by the descriptions of the spiritual world and set that as their aspiration.
I suppose attraction for Krishna can come from Srimad Bhagavatam reading.
Yes. It comes from Bhagavatam, it comes from the book Bhagavatam, and it comes from the Bhakta Bhagavatam. Therefore, Mahaprabhu told the Bengali poet, Jaha Bhagavata Pada Vaishnaveda Svane Ekanta Ashraya Kore Chaitanya Tarune. You have to also hear from someone who has that attraction, because they can give you that attraction by hearing from a sadhu. So yes, we must do that.
Thank you.
I think that answered my question.
Okay. Are we running short of time? We just do another kirtan and then... Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.
Just a little bit of kirtan and then...